Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Today, I will be talking about six of the presentations that were held at the annual meeting of the American Society of Hematology, ASH 2022, which was held in New Orleans, Louisiana, from 10 to 13 December 2022. Enjoy listening. So the first study I would like to talk about is about blinatumomab in patients with newly diagnosed B-lineage acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or BALL. It's a phase 3 trial called ECOG-ACRIN E1910, and the results were presented by Dr. Mark Litzo of the Mayo Clinic in the USA. The phase 3 ECOG-ACRIN E1910 clinical trial exposed patients with newly diagnosed BALL to 2.5 months of Berlin-Frankfurt-Munster induction chemotherapy, modified from the UCAL-12 protocol. Those with a complete remission or a complete remission with incomplete count recovery received CNS treatment intensification with high-dose methotrexate plus pegaspargase. Hereafter, the MRD status was assessed, and patients were randomized 1-to-1 to consolidation chemotherapy plus 4 28-day cycles of blinatumomab or to chemotherapy alone. Finally, all randomized patients received 2.5 years of POMP maintenance chemotherapy. The current study aimed to compare the blinatumomab-containing regimen with the chemotherapy alone arm for overall survival in 224 MRD-negative patients. The results were presented after a median follow-up time of 43 months. There was a clear overall survival benefit for patients in the blinatumomab arm compared with patients in the chemotherapy alone arm, with a median OS of not reached versus 71.4 months and a corresponding hazard ratio of 0.42, 95% confidence interval of 0.24 to 0.75, and a log rank p-value of 0.003. Dr. Litzo added that the 3.5-year OS rates were 83% and 65% respectively. Similarly, the relapse-free survival comparison favored the blinatumomab arm over the chemotherapy arm, not reached versus 22.4 months with a hazard ratio of 0.46. Finally, according to Dr. Litzo, the combination therapy was well tolerated and no new safety issues were observed. Next, I would like to talk about a study that investigated a triplet regimen in FLT3-mutated acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. It was a phase 1-2 study, and the results were presented by Dr. Nicholas Short of the University of Texas in the USA. Patients with relapse-refractory FLT3-mutated AML, or newly diagnosed FLT3-mutated AML, unfit for intensive chemotherapy, received a regimen of azacitidine, venetoclax, and gilteritinib in a phase 1-2 study. In total, there were 47 participants. After the phase 1 part of the study, 80 mg was selected as the phase 2 expansion dose of gilteritinib. The primary endpoint of the phase 2 part of the trial was complete remission, CR, or complete remission with incomplete count recovery, CRI. CR was achieved in 92% of the participants who were treated with the triplet regimen in the frontline. The two remaining patients in this cohort achieved CRI, and a morphologic leukemia-free state, MLFS, response, respectively. Correspondingly, 20% of the participants in the relapse refractory cohort reached CR, 15% achieved CRI, and 35% had an MLFS response. In addition, 93% of the participants in the frontline cohort were on marrow remission after 14 days or had an aplastic marrow. In the relapse refractory cohort, the corresponding rate was 63%. In the frontline cohort, the regimen was generally well tolerated with minimal non-hematological toxicity, said Dr. Short. Nonetheless, one patient died due to an infection in this cohort. In the relapse refractory cohort, most adverse events were related to myelosuppression, but mostly manageable with mitigation strategies. In this cohort, there were 4 unsteady deaths, 2 due to an infection, 1 because of an intracranial hemorrhage, and 1 due to disseminated intravascular coagulation. Some other interesting results came from the Monumental 1 study, which is a phase 1-2 trial investigating talquetamab in heavily pretreated multiple myeloma, MM. Talquetamab is a novel first-in-class T-cell redirecting bispecific antibody targeting the antigen GPRC5D, said Professor Ajay Chari of the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, USA. In the phase 1 part of the Monumental 1 study, talquetamab showed an overall response rate of 64-70% in patients with relapse refractory MM. Professor Chari presented the results of the phase 2 part of the Monumental 1, including 288 patients with MM who had received at least 3 prior lines of therapy and of a cohort of patients who had received prior T-cell redirection therapy, which were 51 patients. Participants were randomized 1-to-1 to either 0.4 mg per kilo talquetamab every week or to a dose of 0.8 mg per kilo biweekly. In patients who were triple class refractory, the overall response rates were 72.6% and 71% for once weekly dosing and biweekly dosing, respectively. Similarly, in pentadrug refractory patients, the corresponding overall response rates were 71.4% and 70.6%. Furthermore, the overall response rates in the cohort of patients who had received prior T-cell redirection therapy were 72.2% for those who had received prior CAR-T therapy and 44.4% for those who had received prior bispecific antibody therapy. As for safety, grade 3 and 4 anemia, neutropenia, lymphopenia, and thrombocytopenia was reported in approximately 20-30% of participants in both dosing groups. Professor Chari commented that cytopenia was generally limited to the first few cycles. Also, grade 3 or 4 infections occurred in 11.7-16.8% of the participants. Rates of non-hematological adverse events of grade 3 or 4 were not higher than 3.5% for a specific event. The most common any-grade adverse events were cytokine release syndrome with 79%, skin-related adverse events with 55.9%, and nail-related adverse events with 51.7%. The Phase 3 Monumental 3 study will further investigate talquetamab in combination with established therapies. Then I would like to talk about the Phase 3 Triangle study, which assessed ibrutinib added to autologous stem cell transplantation, or ASCT, in patients with mantle cell lymphoma. The results were presented by Professor Martin Dreiling of the University Hospital Munich in Germany. The Phase 3 Triangle study randomized 870 patients with previously untreated mantle cell lymphoma, or MCL, younger than 66 years of age, 1-to-1-to-1, to one of three study arms. Arm A, R-CHOP, RDAP, chemotherapy followed by ASCT and observation, arm A plus I, again chemotherapy followed by ASCT, but now with 2 years of ibrutinib maintenance therapy added to it, or arm I, which started with chemotherapy followed only by ibrutinib maintenance therapy. Of note, rituximab maintenance was added to all three arms following national guidelines. The primary endpoint was failure-free survival. The A plus I arm was superior to the A arm in terms of failure-free survival, with 3-year rates of 88% and 72%, with a corresponding hazard ratio of 0.52 and a p-value of 0.0008. Next, the A arm did not outperform the I arm, with 3-year failure-free survival rates 72% in the A arm and 86% in the I arm, corresponding hazard ratio of 1.77 and a p-value of 0.99. Professor Dreiling added that it was too soon to call whether the A plus I arm was superior to the I arm. Similarly, the overall survival data were premature at time of the presentation. Hematologic adverse events of grade 3 or higher appear to be higher in the A plus I arm with 50% than in the I arm with 28% or in the A arm with 21%. Likewise, the rate of infection grade of 3 or higher was elevated in the A plus I arm with 25% compared to the I arm with 19% and the A arm with 13%. Importantly, 1.4% of the participants in the A arm and 1% of the participants in the A plus I arm died from therapy, whereas 0% died due to therapy in the I arm. Then there was a study about efgartigimod in immune thrombocytopenia, a phase 3 trial called ADVANCE, and the results were presented by Dr. Catherine Broom of the Georgetown University in the USA. The ADVANCE trial randomized 131 patients with chronic or persistent primary immune thrombocytopenia, or ITP, who had received at least two prior ITP treatments, or one prior and one concurrent treatment, and had platelet counts below 30 times 10 to the 9th per liter. They were randomized 2-to-1 to efgartigimod or placebo. The primary endpoint was the proportion of patients with a sustained platelet count response, defined as equal or higher than 50 times 10 to the 9th platelets per liter in at least 4 out of 6 visits in week 19 to 24 of the study, in the absence of intercurrent events. In total, 21.8% of the participants in the efgartigimod arm and 5% of the participants in the placebo arm achieved the primary endpoint, reflecting a significant difference between the arms in favor of the experimental drug, with a p-value of 0.032. In addition, the number of cumulative weeks of disease control showed a benefit for the efgartigimod arm over the placebo arm, with a mean of 6.1 weeks versus 1.5 week, and a p-value of 0.0009. Dr. Broom added that the results were consistent across subgroups. The study drug was well tolerated in the study population, and results were consistent with previous data that has been published on efgartigimod. Serious adverse events were more prevalent in the placebo arm than in the efgartigimod arm, with 15.6% versus 8.1%. Dr. Broom commented that this was mostly due to an increased rate of bleeding events in the placebo arm, with 86.7% versus 70.9%. Finally, the infection rate was numerically slightly higher in the efgartigimod arm than in the placebo arm, with 29.1% versus 22.2%. Finally, I would like to talk about the Phase 3 APPLY-PNH trial, which investigated iptacopan in patients with paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria, or PNH, who had residual anemia after anti-C5 standard of care treatment. The results were presented by Professor Régis de la Tour of the Saint-Louis Hospital in Paris, France. A recently published Phase 2 study showed that iptacopan controlled hemolysis in a group of 10 patients with PNH and active hemolysis who did not respond well to eculizumab. To further investigate iptacopan, the APPLY-PNH trial randomized 97 patients with PNH and residual anemia, despite treatment with standard of care, 8-5 to iptacopan 200 mg oral twice daily or to intravenous anti-C5 standard of care they received before randomization. The primary endpoints were achieving an increase from baseline in hemoglobin of at least 2 grams per deciliter in the absence of red blood cell transfusions, and achieving an increase from baseline in hemoglobin of at least 12 grams per deciliter in the absence of red blood cell transfusions. In total, 51 out of 60 patients in the iptacopan arm achieved the first primary endpoint, compared with 0 out of 35 patients in the standard of care arm, with a population estimate difference of 80.3%. The second primary endpoint was reached by 42 patients in the iptacopan arm and by 0 patients in the standard of care arm. The corresponding population estimate difference was 67%. The safety analysis showed that there appeared to be a higher incidence of headache with 16.1% versus 2.9% and diarrhea with 14.5% versus 5.7% in the iptacopan arm, but breakthrough hemolysis was more common in the standard of care arm than in the iptacopan arm, with 17.1% versus 3.2%. Finally, the rate of serious treatment emergent adverse events seemed to be higher in the standard of care arm, with 14.3% versus 9.7%.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.